Hey, everybody, welcome to The Barbell Strikes Back. I'm your host again, James McDermott, and I'm joined by Frank Ford once again. Frank, how are we doing?
Good, James. Thanks for having me on again. Glad to be back.
Yeah. We have all kinds of things that we're going to talk about. You know, this isn't an interview style show. It's more of a what's going on type of show. So, yeah. Frank, how has training been going? I want to talk about last week. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about last week. You had an outstanding week last week. Can you kind of recap the awesomeness of that training week?
Yeah. Well, we've been putting a lot of work in, like, because my jerks have always been a strong suit for me. Like, we've not that we haven't had to work on them, but the strength's always been there. We've worked on some of the technique, and that's always been there. So we've been trying to get the clean to kind of match that, right? So we can, you know, because obviously you have to do both at a competition. So,
yeah.
And we were at a point where I was able to jerk well in excess of what I was able to clean. So finally, I think last week we made some progress, and we were doing from the floor, from the hips, from blocks, you know, all different kinds of positions, and finally able to hit in well into the 50s, and we even hit 60. So we're clean. So we're making some progress. So that was really, really good about last week. And we made some pretty good strides in our consistency with the snatches too. So
yeah, it's great progress when we can break through those barriers and we can look back on a certain date and a certain little time period during your training and be like, this is when we broke through 140 kilo range on the clean and jerk. This is when we broke through the 150 range. And last week, every single training session, for the most part, you hit 150 on the clean in some way. And the jerk followed on a lot of those too, if we were doing the jerk. And the week before was no different. So we're kind of having a big breakthrough on that technical aspect and being able to use your strength in a more productive way. Because I know you can clean 170. Like, I can see it. I can visualize it. It's in my head. You know, like the next step is just to break down those barriers where you start to believe you can and start to feel the lift a little more and be like, okay, this is just how it's going to feel. And 170 is going to feel just as heavy as 160 once did. And 160 is going to feel just as heavy as 150 or 140 once did. And so much of that is mental. You know, it's physical, but it's also mental.
Well, we had a pretty, you know, a couple of weeks ago, we were starting to build back up to the 50s again. I mean, we were doing a lot of things from, you know, different positions and going doubles and triples and stuff. So it'd been a little bit since we could really go for that kind of number. And then when we finally were, you know, going for it again, we were having a couple of days where, like, because I'm not somebody usually that clarks weight. Like, usually
no,
I go under it. But we were having a couple of days where we'd get up into the 50s and I was just not mentally wanting to go under it for whatever reason. Even though I thought I wanted to, I thought I was ready for it. As soon as the bar would make contact with thighs and I'd pull it and it would come more than high enough and I just couldn't, you know, bring myself to go under the bar. And I don't know what that was, but, you know, we kept doing it and kept knocking on the door, knocking on the door, knocking on the door. And then we kicked that SOB in last week and cleaned 160. So,
yeah. And what this whole situation kind of reminds me of is that like text from that image that I posted in the Barbell Club group of the archer. And so I want to read that so everyone knows what we're talking about. And then I'm going to bring it full circle on how you can kind of build a plan to move past that. Cause I've been thinking about this a lot. Like I actually saved the photo on my phone. I don't save very many things on my phone. I like to have it just everything's deleted. It gets posted and then it's gone. And I'm like, I'm going to keep this. Like I want to get it printed, Frank, and put on the wall of the gym. So here it is. Let me read it out and then we'll talk about it more. When an archer is shooting for nothing, he has all his skill. If he shoots for a brass buckle, he is already nervous. If he shoots for a prize of gold, he goes blind, or he sees two targets. He is out of his mind. His skill has not changed, but the prize divides him. He cares. He thinks more of winning than of shooting. The need to win drains him of power. And that's by someone called, I'm going to butcher the name, Shang Zhu. I'm assuming from Chinese philosophy or something like right. that. But I saw this post and on an Instagram channel somewhere where they post, you know, like motivational things. And I was like, nothing I've ever read on any of these motivational posts ever has reminded me more of weightlifting than this right here. Because I see it all the time. Not that's just so you, true. You know, but like Schaff. Like Schaff's a perfect example. Like if his PR is 91 kilos, then he's going to hit, you know, every kilo. We made 1 kilo jumps all the way up to 91, you know, and it comes down to 87, 88, 89, 90. He's going to make them all. We go 90.5, he'll make it. But then as soon as we go up above that barrier, we go 91.5, everything changes. Yep. And I know weightlifters or strength sport athletes out there have experienced that before. It's like something changes mentally when that PR is on the bar. And I like what it says here. It's he is out of his mind. His skill has not changed, but the prize divides him.
Well, yeah, it's that PR, that number, that whatever is on the line, whether it be, you know, I mean, it could be a weight that you've hit before, right? And then you get to a meet and then all of a sudden there's a medal on the line and there's pressure all of a sudden. So like I've been there and, you know, like I think last week, finally, we were just like, you know what? It's going to hurt. We know what it's going to feel like because 40 felt like this. My first crack at 30, 20, like all these numbers leading up to this have all hurt. It's all felt the same. It's going to feel just like that. We've been there before. And so you got to just go out and do it. And so, you know, it took a little time and kept coming back at it. But yeah, that quote was exactly what I was going through and what a lot of lifters, I think, go through whenever there's a PR on the board or, you know, a medal or something on the line of the competition.
Exactly. Well, now, how do you try to move past it, though? Because, you know, it's going to be there. It's this very nefarious thing. The PR is loaded on the bar, on the bar, and all of a sudden, the breathing changes. You know, your mental focus changes. And what I see is athletes going to approach the bar differently than they did on every other lift. Like, all of a sudden, there's a different start position. There's a different routine to go about setting up on the bar because everyone has their own routine. How do you personally try to move past that?
I think you have to be okay with missing. You know, like misses happen. It doesn't mean it's not going to happen. It doesn't mean that you're not going to eventually get the make. You know, we've had to take, you know, 150 plus kilos a couple times sometimes in training to get it. You know, so not being afraid of missing and not letting that get in your head, like moving to the next lift and then just keep going back, right? Like we don't miss 155 and then we're like, oh, well, we'll try this again in 4 months, right? We're back at it the next day. You know, we'll take it however many times we can reasonably safely take it that day, and then, you know, we'll go back at it the next chance we get. Like I think that's the big thing with it, at least the last couple of weeks, is we took a lot of chances because we knew it was there and we just took a lot of attempts at it, and eventually the reps paid off, you know. Yeah. Like sometimes, you know, I've heard of people that they'll take an attempt and they won't go for another PR for months. And to me, that's crazy. Like I need to just like kind of work out the nerves around it. And eventually you're not afraid of it anymore. You know, I mean, how many times am I going to go under 160 kilos before it sticks? You know, it's not going to be right the first time. So we just got to keep doing it.
Yeah. I feel like you have to have a high level of persistence when you're attacking any goal. Right. Mm-hmm. And it kind of reminds me of there's an Instagram page out there called Nature is Metal. And I watch it all the time, and you'll see like some of the wild dogs or like hyenas, when they're trying to take down an animal that's way bigger than them, you know, it might take a while. You know, this might be like 30 minutes, an hour, like who knows? I guess it depends on how many of them are there too, but that thing's going to be fighting back. And something so small keeps coming back to get its little nips in, just nipping at the hind legs. Just, it keeps coming. It won't stop. It's just singular in its vision and its goal to take down something that could crush it in a second. Right. And of course it has some confidence that its friends are there, you know, its family is there to back it up. But I always see, like, it's like always like one or two going in at a time. And sometimes they take hits too, you know, like they take hard bumps if they get caught in the path of like that big bull or whatever it is that they're trying to beat. And the way I kind of think of it is the pack is all the reps that you're putting into trying to take down that PR. Like, you're that one lone wolf that's trying to go for like the hits every single time. And then the pack is all the reps on all the days that you've been trying to just whittle away at that big wildebeest of a PR, 160. And I think that's why it's also important from a coaching standpoint to not only take different cracks at it, but take different cracks at these weights from different positions.
Right.
That way it helps with your confidence. And if you master, let's say it's 150, you hit 150 clean and jerk, you know, from the hips, then that opens the door for hitting it from the knees. And then that opens the door from hitting it from the blocks.
Right.
Then that opens the door from doing a triple on a jerk off of the blocks. And then, you know, doing way in excess of that on the front squat, knowing that, okay, if I get under 150, I can stand that up no problem. And then crushing deadlifts and then finally connecting with the whole thing and putting it together from the floor. Right. You've already just whittled away at it with all those little nips on just hitting this weight from all different angles. That's a part of my coaching philosophy, Frank, is from all angles. Like, you have to attack the sport and the lifts from all angles. And I think that that's a big way to move past it.
Well, I mean, it's paid off. I think the biggest thing is just, you know, I think something that any weightlifter that wants to be successful, I think something that we all have to have in common is that we have to be stubborn. You know, like, you can't let the weight win. And, you know, like, okay, maybe today's not my day, but I'm going to be back tomorrow and the next day and the next day. And it's, you know, you're not going to deny me forever, right? Like, it's going to happen. So that's, you know, it's just about being stubborn in my mind. You know, and some days, you know, like I said, it takes more than one attempt. You know, I'm not going to put a PR on the bar and only go for it once. You know, like, if I miss it, I'm coming back and I'm trying again and again. And, you know, just going to be stubborn.
And it's how you react to those misses, right? Like, I know when we go in there and we're like, all right, today's the day, 155, like, we're going to do it, or 160 or whatever it's going to be. And you don't get it, you know, like, yeah, okay. Like, I see it. You're a little disappointed, but I would say you're never upset.
No.
Would you say that's true?
Yeah. Like, I don't feel like I get angry. Like, it's definitely never like a day where I'm like just like angry and whatever. I mean, we all have our bad days, right? Like, sure, there's been days where I've like thrown my belt or something because I'm just frustrated with myself, but it's never like I want to quit the sport or something like that. Like, definitely I've been frustrated and there's been days where it's been, you know, tough, but it's something that you use to kind of motivate you, you know, or at least I do. You know, I know there's some people out there that they don't and it doesn't work, and you know, that's it for them. But, you know, I think that's the difference between someone who stays in the sport a long time and someone who doesn't. I don't plan on, you know, being around for a little bit. I plan on doing this for a while. So,
yeah, you plan on maybe doing it for a lifetime, you know?
Yeah, we'll see.
Masters Frank, you know, 75 years old, going out there doing the lifts.
Yeah, I don't know. I heard your podcast with Jim Storch and he's got some pretty good records. So, you know, maybe that'll be a goal.
We could go for some of those records.
I don't know. He's a monster, but
he is. Well, it's like you said, you know, when I see you throw the belt, I know that it's okay. If this isn't Frank being like, you know what, I don't want to do this tomorrow. You know, I need a week off. I just need to clear my head. I know you're throwing the belt because you care, like you want to hit that lift so badly. And you're putting everything you can possibly put into it on that day. And this reminds me of a quote. I'm not sure if I posted this one, but I've been kind of reminiscing and going through all these old photos that I have on flash drives. And I posted one on my Instagram page of group photo from Donnie Schenkel seminar. And one of the things that I had written down in my notebook that he said was, you know, max effort doesn't mean max percentage. It means what you can do today. Right. And it's, that will be, it, that was one big thing that I learned from his seminar. So I don't think anyone else on all the other seminars I went to really talked about it, but it's going to be different every single day. And you're still putting in the maximum effort, but maximum effort might be, if you are going to equate percentage to it, it might be 85% one day. Then it might be 90% one day. And then it could also be like 70% one day, where you're still putting in your required amount of work and effort into that bar, but you're just not going to get past a certain point at that day.
Yeah, no, it makes so much sense, and it's so true, you know, because, like, I don't think you've ever let me put something on the bar that I wasn't capable of doing at that moment, right? Doesn't mean I made the lift, but we were capable of it. It's just that day, maybe it didn't work out, you know? So, I mean, you know, it's not always about the percentage. It's, you know, it's really true that, you know, some days it's, you know, maybe your technique's a little off, or you're a little nicked up, or you didn't get the right amount of sleep, stuff like that. I mean, there's a million different things that go into, you know, when you get to the level of, you know, you've been in the sport a few years. I mean, PRs are a little harder to come by, right? And some days, I mean, it's going to take a perfect day, and everything's going to have to line up for you to hit that PR. So, you know, I think I'm, you know, past some of those days of walking in and hitting a 10 kilo snatch PR. I think those days might be a little bit behind me, but, you know, so it's going to take a little bit more of, you know, everything lining up to hit those numbers. So it totally makes sense what Donnie said.
Well, it's like sometimes, like we were joking about this the other day during training, sometimes PRs are a little different, you know, like I we have a giant spreadsheet on your Facebook page.
And, oh my gosh.
And there's things on it there's things that aren't on it that could be like, okay, we had a PR on taking a certain jump. Well, what was the jump we took with snatch?
Well, I think from snatch, we were going straight from 90 kilos to 100 for doubles without, I don't think we've ever done that before during doubles. Like maybe during some singles, we've made that 10 kilo jump, but usually when we get to 100, we're starting to kind of tighten up the jumps a little bit to kind of prepare and line up a, you know, a run at a PR or something like that.
Yeah. So there's a perfect example of a 10 kilo jump on doubles. You know, we didn't think that we'd ever done that before. And it's like, all right, well, that's some sort of an improvement, you know? And it's like, that's like, you have to look at what progress are you making overall? Was that something that you could not do before? Would taking the jump from 90 to 100 meant mislifts or really ugly lifts? Mm-hmm. Then, and now we can do it. That's improvement. That's that's a refinement of technique that shows a change in the mental status when approaching a lift and being able to do those lifts. And I think that's very valuable, you know, and it's, you can track any kind of thing for some sort of a PR, some sort of improvement. You know, it could be squats. Maybe you always squat with a belt and up to a certain point. Maybe you've never squatted. Someone out there has never squatted 100 kilos without a belt, and then you do, and it feels easy. That tells you something. You're on to something there. And that could be something that you know, and you can have belt PRs or no belt PRs.
Well, it's funny you bring up the equipment, because we've been talking about that a lot over the last like cycle or two of, like, you know, when I used to put my knee sleeves on, and when I, you know, at what point did I start putting on a belt? And, you know, we had to reassess because the numbers were going up, but I was still putting on my gear at the same number, right? So, for example, say like for clean and jerk, I used to put on my knee sleeves and my belt at 120 kilos or something, right? Warming up. And now, I mean, we went all the way up to 55 that day with no knee sleeves, and I didn't put my belt on until 40. So, you know, I think, and it's not unsafely doing that. It's just that, you know, we're trying to train ourselves to not have to rely on the equipment, right? And be able to be strong in certain positions. And it's making me stronger by not having to rely on the knee sleeves and the belt. And then when it's at that point, that certain percentage, then we'll put it on for safety. Yeah, you know, we don't rely on it to make the lift. We rely on it to keep us safe. And I think that's a difference that
from
what we used to do.
that equipment is, it has value. It certainly helps. We're trying to lift heavy, but if we're unable to lift because we don't, you know, we don't have our blankie, you know, like, oh no, don't have the knee sleeves today. I don't know if I can do this. And right. that changes your mental outlook and how you're approaching the lifts and how you're being free in your lifts when you go to perform them, not kind of stuttering your movement or being jerky because you're afraid to go to use your strength and use your power and do the lift the way that you normally do it because you don't have wrist wraps on or you don't have a belt or you don't have your favorite shoes, you know. I think that's important. And what happens if you show up to a meet and that stuff got lost or it got stolen or you just forgot it?
Yeah, no, I was just going to say, like, I know for a fact now after these last few cycles of what we've been doing, like, I know that if I forgot my gym bag, right, and all I had was my shoes, right? So I know I could show up to a meet and have a really good day and be really competitive without any of that stuff. You know, like, I can clean and jerk. I could go in and clean and jerk 150 without my knee sleeves, without my belt. So if I had to, you know, so, you know, and be safe and not get hurt.
Yeah. So that's an important, that's a skill on its own, right? That's an important attribute as an athlete to have versus to being reliant on things. And when things aren't going the way you want them to, you can't make lifts. It's like, it should be the opposite. It's like, it's kind of like the quote, when an archer is shooting for nothing, he has all his skill. Well, you could also, you know, but if he shoots for a brass buckle, he's already nervous. You could tweak that a little bit to, if the conditions aren't just as he wants it, he can't do it either. Not the fact that there isn't a prize. It's like, okay, this isn't your spot, you know, in the gym. This isn't your bar. You know, there's people watching you now. Like, how do you react to all of that? And the best lifters are the ones that can put that all aside, you know, the prizes, you know, the PRs, the teams, winning gold medals, and also the fact that there are things that they can't control that are going to play a role in this whole situation. They can put all that aside and just lift the way they lift with no impediments.
Yeah, no, you can definitely tweak that quote to a lot of different things, I think, and it would apply. It's pretty, I mean, I wouldn't say universal, but there's a lot of things that there's a lot of things that you could apply to, especially within the anything to do with competition, you know. So in the sports world, it's definitely definitely relevant. So I think, you know, there's just a lot of things that you have to have your blinders on for as an athlete, you know, and things aren't always going to go perfect. And it goes back to what I said before, you know, it's just, you know, talking about what Donnie said, you know, things aren't always going to be perfect and, you know, you got to do your best that day and you can't, you know, what am I going to do? I have a knee issue going on right now. Am I not going to go to the gym at all? Or am I going to find a way around what I've got going on to still get some kind of training in, right? I'm still going to figure it out. Like, I'm not going to sit home on my butt and get weak. I'm going to figure something out. You know, I forget my thumb tape. Am I not going to snatch? Like, no, you're going to deal with it and do what you got to do. So it's just, you know, whatever it is for that day, you do your best and it's going to pay off.
Then you're going to get a PR of snatching with no thumb tape.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
It's in the notes. This is another thing from the Shankle seminar that I went to years ago. In the notes, it says right here, there's no bad day in training as long as you make training. So it's like, all right, you got to train. You went in to train. Like, you could easily have texted me in the morning when at, you know, 5:30 in the morning, whatever it is, when I've already gotten up and been like, James, my knee hurts. I can't go in.
Yeah.
I can't train. I can't do it. I'm going to need a whole week off. I'm going to be loaded up on ibuprofen.
No.
And we'll reevaluate later, you know. But no, it's like we went back in the gym, we made modifications. Okay, we can't snatch past a certain point, but we can still do high pulls. And that's kind of sparked something new that, you know, I kind of wish we were maybe doing before, where it's like, okay, if we're going heavy on lift, on the snatch, maybe if it's even just the floor, and let's say we get up to like 113 or 114 for the day, well, let's do some high pulls after that, you know, on what we would have wanted to ultimately do and feel that weight in our hands. Right. So I feel like, you know, for every bad thing that could possibly happen, you got to look on the flip side, you know, what's the positivity? And it kind of drew us to this new practice that we're kind of experimenting with.
Yeah. And we're kind of going beyond it, right? Like, I think 20 has been the goal for a while in the snatch, and, you know, we're knocking on the door. We're getting there. It's close. We're a couple kilos off, and, you know, it's going to be one of those days that, you know, some things are going to have to line up. But I mean, we're doing what we can. We're making progress. And, you know, now the last few sessions we've been pulling past 20, you know, we were up to 30 or 35. Yep. On Monday and pulling it high, you know, high enough to snatch it. So it's, you know, we keep doing that. And then, I mean, eventually 20 is not going to feel like much.
No. So. And that's just, you know, just letting you feel that weight in your hands. Like, mm-hmm. look what you're doing with it. Like, this isn't so bad. Like, right. But if you never have it on the bar, you never try to pick it up, you know, and do a deadlift with it, or I wonder if I could just pull it, you know, like what could I do with it? How high could I pull it? Just something that's not going to really like be like, okay, yeah, you pulled it that high. Of course it's high enough, but actually snatching it is a whole another thing. But it's like, look what you can do with it, and look at how it feels. And I want to talk to you about this. I like 20 is the goal. 20 is going to happen. Yeah. But I'm wondering if we're putting too much emphasis on 20, and that's creating a mini ceiling. Whereas if we move the goalposts and be like 30 or 35, then it's like, okay, now 20 is just in the way now. 20 is in the way to the bigger goal, you know, like 30, Frank, is Thanos.
Right.
And well, 20 is just, you know, like a subordinate. It's just a little underling that we have to get past.
Yeah, I don't think we're far off of being able to snatch 30 either. Like, it's not that far away. You know, it's not a number that, you know, sitting here thinking about it now, it doesn't scare me, right? It's just, I think those days where we were like, we needed to hit the right numbers and earn our attempts at 20 kind of put it on a pedestal for me. And I think that was something that was in my head, you know, and now that we're, you know, I'm pulling 35 to my chin almost, like, you know, I'm not going to be so scared next time that I'm going to snatch 120, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
so,
or 118, think, or 119, yeah,
whatever the number is, like, you know, getting those four reds on the bar is going to be, you know, it's going to happen soon. But I think, you know, I gave it a little too much respect, and, you know, not that I'm telling anyone to not respect the weight that they're lifting. Like, you should always respect your weight. Otherwise it could be very dangerous, but I think it was giving it too much. You know, I was putting it up on a pedestal and like, oh man, 120, that's like the holy grail. And it's like, we're just getting started. Like 120, yeah. I want it in the rear view soon. I want to go past that. So, you know, we're pulling on big numbers and.
That reminds me of like back when I was lifting bigger weights, or as I was like, when I was doing it every day, you know, back in the day, one of my best sessions was a day where I literally told the bar, fuck you, like an inanimate object and whatnot. Mm-hmm. And I was just so pissed. And this was the first time I'd ever snatched 170 pounds. So for me, that was big weight at the time. And I was doing it every single day, trying to max out. And what I would do is I would hit a million attempts. Like every little weight from 75 pounds, and I'm speaking in pounds because that's all I have, you know, so I don't have kilo plates, but 70, 80, 85, 90, 95, 100, all the way up. And then I would get to like 135, 140, 145, and just like not have a lot at those bigger end weights. And then one day I was like, you know what? I'm doing this every single day. Like, I'm just gonna do it today. So I started with 95, went to 115, went to 135, 155, which that was the fastest I ever gotten to 155. And then I just put on 170 for a 5 kilo or 5 pound PR and hit it. And after I had hit 135 and went to 155, that's where I was kind of getting a little shaky. And I was in my head pacing around behind the bar, just going like, you bastard, you're doing this to me. Like, this is, what like I remember thinking in my head, because I was an 85 kilo lifter, I was like, I'm bigger than you. So I said, I'm bigger than you. And then I snatched 155 and then went to 170. So that's five lifts to get to a PR. And I'm like, I should be able to do this. Like, I've been doing this every single day for like a year and a half. It's automatic. You know, yeah. I don't need to be so conservative. Today, I'm just going to let go. Because you know what? I'm going to do the same thing again tomorrow. So I can go back and do different jumps, different things tomorrow, you know, if I want to, or the day after that. But I was like, you know what? I'm bigger than you. You are causing me all these problems. I'm not going to let you get away with it. And here we go. And then after that, I jumped to 185, which would have been body weight. And I think I missed it 11 or 13 times. And then I'm like, and then I'm like, all right, session's done.
Yeah. Barbell strikes back.
It does. It always does.
Yeah, it's actually funny you mentioned that, because I think that's something we've been doing a lot lately too, in my training at least, is messing around with the jumps. So, like, piece of advice, I guess, for anybody that's listening, right? Play around with the jumps you take in training. You know, like, if you're going for a PR day and you always warm up and you hit, say, your PRs are 100 in the snatch, right? And you want to snatch 101, you always go 75 80 85 90 95 100, right? What we've been doing lately, and it seems to be working, is playing around with the jumps. Now, I'm not saying necessarily go and start making giant jumps and take four lifts and put on a PR that, you know, I'm, you know, do whatever you got to do, but, you know, hit some of those weird numbers that you've never hit, right? Because you might be able to snatch 85 kilos, but how many times have you snatched 82, right? Exactly. Or 83, you know what I mean? And taking those different jumps is kind of been, it's been fun a little bit. It kind of freshened things up, you know, because I mean, I've hit 130 kilo clean and jerk a million and one times, right, working my way into the 40s, but now,
and it starts to weigh on you.
Yeah. And it's like,
especially if you're missing it all the time, or that's like the limit,
right? And you know, so we would always go like 30 35 40, and then see what we could push into the 40s. Now I'm going 30 straight to 40. Screw that. And then we're going to hit some funny, weird number in the 40s and set up for something in the 50s, right? So stuff that I haven't hit. Like, when have I ever clean jerked 144, right? Like, I don't think we'd ever had that on the bar before.
Yeah, there's some weights we've never done.
You know, so, like, we put it on, and that can be, you know, maybe not a PR in your head, but, you know, it's something you haven't done before. And it might set you up a little bit different to take some different jumps to try and get that PR, right? So instead of always taking a 5 kilo jump to try and make that PR, you know, maybe you take some weird jumps, and now you're hitting like a 3 or 4 kilo jump, and you know, it's just a little bit different. So yeah, kind of mixes things up. It's worked so far for us that, you know, we're always, every single day, like, we've gotten to 113 kilos in the snatch in like probably 10 different ways, you know, in the last few weeks. So, you know, and from all different positions.
Yeah. Yeah, it's almost like a different type too of like taking risk. It's like if you're so married to the same sequence of numbers to get to your top end weights, that just maybe kind of puts a spotlight on, you're not willing to step outside of your comfort zone. And then if you're not willing to go with some of these different numbers, because and if they affect you in a way that you can't make lifts, then now there's a big part of your problem right there. And that now, when you have that new number of a PR on the board, then now you're not going to get it, because different numbers affect you. It's outside your comfort zone.
I mean, when we were trying to get ready for the Arnold, and we had our eyes on some numbers for openers and stuff like that, and I think, you know, a few months out, like, plenty of time, but we were having some struggles around like 100 kilos. We put 100 on, and all of a sudden three digits and the world changed, right? Now all of a sudden we're, you know, footwork's being weird and we're not doing things right. And, you know, it's not necessarily a PR, but it's just the fact that now we're in the hundreds, right? We got the reds and the yellows on the bar, and would, like, things would change. So, you know, we started taking some different jumps, you know, we'd put 101, 102, or, you know, hit 98, 99, then skip right over 100. And then eventually now we don't even, you know, we're going straight from 90 to 100 and moving on.
Yeah,
for doubles, you know, like, it's not a big deal.
And, you know, right now we're talking about the snatch and the clean and jerk, but you can really apply all of this to any type of lift, or exercise that you're trying to make progress on. You know, like maybe you're a CrossFit athlete and you're trying to get handstand walks. You know, it's the same level of commitment. It's the same experimentation. It's the same commitment to the process of getting better and also dealing with the failures and dealing with your own mental hangups. And it's what's the longest you've gone, let's say on the snatch, between PRs?
Between PRs, probably I would have to say in recent memory, I think, I mean, cause I'm still new, so I've been hitting PRs pretty frequently. You know, I'm only into like my third year of lifting. So I haven't gone years in between, but I would say probably close to 6 months, maybe like 4.5-5 months.
Yeah. So that's not that bad, you know, 6 months. And I think there's some people out there that when they get to the point where you're at, where the PRs don't come that frequently, they might start to freak out. Mm-hmm. But I'm looking here at my Shankle notes, and there's a little section called Dark Ages. That's literally what I wrote. And underneath it, it says that, you know, Donnie told us about his dark age period of his training, where it took him 19 months to hit 170 kilos on the snatch. And then it took him 6 years to hit 171.
Yep.
So you're on 6 months. He went on 6 years.
Yeah.
Like, could you imagine, you know, just the patience you would have to have and the commitment just to keep going in? And like, it just feels like you're banging your head against the wall and you're just trying to get it to budge 1 kilo.
Yeah. Well, I think when you're somebody who's at Donnie's level, right? Like, there was a lot of other things motivating him too. I can't imagine he was sitting around for 6 years looking for that 1 kilo. You know, he had world teams that he was trying to make, Pan Am teams that he was trying to make. And those things don't necessarily require him to PR all the time. I think that is more of something where you've got to be consistent and show up and make lists.
He's still winning national championships. He's still on the world team. He's still crushing PRs, probably like off the blocks, the hang, all kinds of other things.
Yeah. So I think
one lift eluded.
Yeah. I think, you know, obviously it's frustrating because you want to keep, you know, there's a point where you're like, I'm not progressing. But for him to hang around for 6 years, I mean, think about that. He was snatching 70 for 6 years. Like, he didn't dip, you know, like he was fighting there for that 1 kilo PR for 6 years. And that's a lot more than a lot of people can say that, you know, that they stuck around in the sport for 6 years, let alone, you know, kept even at a plateau instead of dipping down and losing a little, you know. So that's impressive in and of itself. But I think it goes to show that, like, you've got to have something on the calendar. You've got to have other goals and things out there to motivate you other than just your PR board, right? Like, we all want PRs, but I mean, I think, you know, if you're out there and you're competing and you're staying competitive and winning medals and pushing yourself in other ways, that, you know, it'll keep you around and motivated long enough to eventually get that PR that you're looking for.
Yeah. I know it's been about 4 years since I've PR'd on the snatch. You know, I've PR'd other things like my split snatch or a hang snatch, but from the floor, since I blew out my knee in 2016, it hasn't happened. And, you know, of course, there's been different eras of not training, or not focusing on it, focusing on things.
You've had some different weight classes, too. You've gone down all the way into the low 70s and had some really good body weight PRs as well. So,
yeah,
you know,
different things like that. But it never, you know, I never am the fact that 87 is the most I've ever done at any body weight at any given time is never lost on me. You know, right. No matter the weight class, no matter the what I'm focusing on in my training, it's always just there, just hanging over me. It's like it just follows you, you know. And I know when I started getting back into training, when my knee was healed, one thing that I had to step away from was comparing myself to where I am now and who I am now to where I was back then. You know, it's like I have to look at that and be like, well, there was a guy who snatch and clean and jerk every day. you know, like it didn't even matter if I came back to Binghamton, you know, I would just go to Sona and lift with Patrick when he right. was lifting. So we would go heavy. We'd just max out snatch, clean and jerk and squat really heavy. That was really the program too.
Right.
I really didn't do a whole lot of hang lifts myself or things like that until later. It was always from the floor, snatch, clean and jerk, and then a heavy squat, because that's what my right. coach at the time had me doing. And that's what he would do, you know, so I would just follow along and do that. And it worked. You know, I got really strong with that, really consistent. And then, you know, the accident happened, and then it was hard to return to that kind of mentality and do it all over again. It kind of feels like you know, who's that person in Greek mythology? Is Sisyphus rolling the stone up the hill just to see it fall back down again? And you're like, well, I already got it. So it was at a certain point, and now I have to roll this thing all the way back up there. I don't know if I've got it, you know? Yeah, so it's cool. Like, it just depends on where you're at right now and how you can keep moving on.
Yeah, it's interesting. And, you know, I mean, you're definitely not the first person I've heard talk about that as well. Like, you know, I mean, if you listen, I've heard John North talk about it a lot. You know, like he was saying how he was going through some like periods where he's like, man, I wish I could be lift the numbers I used to lift, stuff like that. And then he has like this realization moment of like, that was a kid who was, you know, a lot younger than I am now, first of all. And you were training twice a day, and you lived and breathed and slept and lived weightlifting day in, day out. You basically lived in the gym. Now you've got kids and a wife and a house and a job and family and all those other things. And, you know, so your priorities change, and, you know, you've been able to grow in other ways and do other things, you know, cause the James that snatched 87, right, wasn't, you know, head coach at Albany CrossFit having a podcast and a book and all these other, you know, things that you've done.
Well, he was. He was.
You were head coach then? Oh, okay.
Yeah,
I've
been head coach for a long time, yeah.
Oh, all right. But still, I mean, you know, you've written how many books and done all these other things. So I think, you know, there's some good to be taken out of that.
Oh, yeah. It's like, I mean, I have more gray hairs now. I'll take credit
for some of those.
Yeah, I'll be a competitive masters. You know, like I'll be able to compete at Masters meets when the world opens back up again, when my next birthday rolls around here. So I have to remember, it's like, you know, it's like I look at those pictures and I'm like, I don't even feel like I look the same. You know, it's like my hair is darker, I had different glasses. I was definitely beefier. You know, it's like, and so then I have to think about, all right, well, what are my goals? You know, like I also know too, back then for me to do what I did, which wasn't a lot, like these are lifts that are big for me, but on the grand scheme of things, these are warm-up weights for junior female lifters out there or kids out there, you know. But it was the highest I was able to take what I was doing at the time. And it's like, okay, well, that also took a lot of time, you know, and now a lot of my time is put into other people in coaching. And which is a good thing and a bad thing, because I definitely know from experience, and other coaches out there know, there can come a point where you are focusing on so many people and taking care of so many people that you start to forget to take care of yourself, you know. Right. And I've been down that rabbit hole many a time. So
well, that's something I can give you credit for, because I mean, most of my sessions, you're right there with me on the other end of the phone training and doing your thing. So it's, you know, it's definitely good to know that you're not at home just sitting on a couch yelling at me. You're in there feeling what I'm feeling. And, you know, I mean, because it's funny, you know, but I snatch 116 kilos and you max out your snatch. And I mean, it feels the same for both of us, whether the number matches, right? I mean, you know, my max and your max, it feels the same. So I know you're going through what I'm going through. So that's, you know, that's something. And then, you know, going forward, I mean, who's to say you wouldn't ever, you know, snatch that much again? I mean, a lot of people get into their mid 30s, and I know I struggle a lot more than you do with things like mobility and technique and stuff like that, you know. And I'm sure your technique now is a lot better than it was at the time that you did do 87. So who's to say that you need to be as big as you were, you know? You might be able to sneak that out with just having such a good technique. So that's, you know, I think it's definitely possible for you to hit those numbers again and then some.
Yeah. I mean, I almost had 90 at Rogue.
And yeah, exactly.
And also, and it's like, back when I was hitting those numbers too, I trained alone 100%. I didn't have anyone else with me. There was hardly anyone at the gym. But being at Rogue, like Sarah Robles is over there, Jenny Arthur's over there, John's in front of us. There's just so many people, you know, you and Shaf are there. Just the energy was like super high. It's like I got it up there, just didn't connect with it. But it's like it's just setting new goals and moving on with them. You know, heavy's gonna be heavy for everybody. Like what that means is different for everybody. And yeah, I'm excited just to keep training. I plan on training for a long time. And I know Jim's story, you know, just had the Jim Storch interview.
Yeah.
He didn't hit his best lifts until he was in
30s, right? Yeah.
38, so 39. He snatched 130 and clean and jerk 170 for 300 total.
300 total at 38 years old. Yeah, the guy's a stud. Yeah, no, I think, you know, and then the effort that you put into the rest of us, right? So, like, you know, all of our PRs and everything like that are definitely your PRs as well. So that's that's something you gotta look at too, right?
Yeah. So. Yeah. I just had an image of myself of you like snatching 130 or something, and then some big lifts at a meet. And remember from the Nutty Professor, Hercules.
Yeah, you could be there. Hercules.
I have to do my nails.
So we'll get the whole team. We'll get the whole team doing it.
The team. Speaking of the team, the team. All right. Here's how. Like, the team is just killing it right now. We start our new training cycle, and while we've been on the podcast this whole time, and before that, my phone has been getting blown up. Bree is sending me like a million videos on Facebook Messenger. So
she's having a good day, I guess.
Yeah, it's just like bing, bing. Well, actually, I have it muted, but every time I look down at my phone, I'm like, "What's going on?" And it's like. 70 pounds, 75 pounds. Like, she's just sending me all the videos.
Good for her.
So, yeah. And Shaf just sent me some videos too that I'll have to take a look at.
Now, speaking of sending you videos, here's an idea, and I'm totally blindsiding you with this on the podcast, right?
Yep.
But hopefully we have some lifters out there, or listeners out there, I'm sorry, that are obviously I hope they're lifters, and I hope you know, they're still finding a way to train during all of this quarantine nonsense that's going on. But what do you think of having people send in video, either tagging at the Barbell Strikes Back on Instagram or sending you a DM, and then we get back on here and do some breakdowns?
Yeah, I like that. I would do that.
So you heard it then, people. So tag your lift or post your lifts to Instagram. Tag at the Barbell Strikes Back or send your video in a DM, and then James and I will jump back on here.
Slide into the DMs. And if not, you know, like, I mean, like we could look at like some Shaf videos. I have so many of those. Like, there's people on the team we can look at, you know, just kind of just talk about what we're seeing and what's going on there.
Yeah, do some breakdowns. So that would be fun. So definitely I think we should do that. That'd be a good time.
No, but everyone's doing great sending the videos. So maybe some other people send in some videos. We'll take a look at it. I'm going to be filming a new instructional video for the Barbell Club. And this one I'll probably post on the Barbell Club Instagram page. I'm calling it the Fantastic Four. It's just four mobility exercises done with a barbell that can be done quickly just to improve and get into some better positions before you start to lift. And they're all the ones that we already do, you know, like the trap smash.
Yeah,
tendon stretch, the external internal rotation stretch, things that I just want to remind the Barbell Club one to do, and also remind them how to do it.
Yeah, because
I can't be there to show them, you know, in the gym, and I'm. It's hard to find videos on YouTube where it's like I'm looking for a very particular thing, and I'll find a YouTube video and it's a guy talking for 7 minutes, and I'm like, I just want the 30-second demo, you know, not the thesis. Before it, you know?
That's what you got to do. You got to go in, pull up the video, just screen record the part that you want, and then post that.
Yeah, I've done that a couple times.
Yeah, that's really what it is. Just kind of nitpick the piece that you need, and then leave the rest out. Yeah. So, but I have to give you credit, man. Like, what you've been able to do with the Barbell Club and your gym, you know, the CrossFit side and everything during the quarantine has been pretty impressive. So, congratulations to you guys for being able to keep everybody motivated and coming and stuff like that. And we've been doing our best down here at Sona, but you know, it's good to see that, you know, the team's still training and everybody's still doing their thing. So hopefully we come out of this still strong and can go attack some meets right away.
Yeah, it's a lot of work. It's a constant contact with a lot of people. Mm-hmm. Hopefully we will be able to reopen soon enough. I don't know. I think we're probably looking at like late June.
Yeah.
Maybe early July some point, you know, which it's not good to hear that, you know, but also that's just me speculating because I don't know. I don't feel like any definitive information has been put out at all.
It's kind of all you can do at this time. Yeah. It's like everybody's just trying to speculate and hope and wish. And we don't know if we're in phase two or phase four or phase three. Like we don't kind of, you know, like we don't really know kind of where the group training gyms kind of fall. So we're hoping that we can be open sooner than later, but we're kind of with you that we're hoping it's sometime in June. But
yeah, like right now we're kind of doing what everyone does with like when you don't feel right or there's something wrong with you, so you go to WebMD and you start speculating on like all the things that could be, and we're just given like a graph of the state that shows different quadrants and phases, and now we're just speculating. Yeah, like how hard would it have been to put the three letters, GYM, on one of those, just somewhere.
Yeah, I know. And then it's like all these convoluted meanings, like, do we qualify as a professional service or are we a recreational activity? Like what are we? So, you know, it's hard because I know like our definition, what it would be, but really it matters on what the higher ups say. So, you know, I want us to obviously open up as soon as it's safe. Would probably be the best way to say it. Like obviously as soon as possible is not the best thing for certain areas. You know, we obviously want to get past, we don't want to see this whole pandemic thing have another breakout. You know, so as soon as it's safe would be nice. And, you know, unfortunately in your area and ours, we haven't had the giant numbers of infected people and cases that, you know, that like down in the city have had. So hopefully it's sooner than later.
Yeah. What I'm thinking of too most is, okay, we're going to get the opportunity to reopen at some point, you know, within the next month or so. So June, July, it's going to happen unless they're like August, which that would be, I don't know. I feel like there'd be riots in the street. And maybe we were just open anyways and be like, you know what? We were with you for a while, but we can't do this anymore. Right. But what I'm the most concerned about is in the fall, when there's a rebound, because we're going into like regular flu season and stuff,
right?
What will be the reaction? You know, are we just going to be like closed, you know, like for the majority of the year, and we can open in a 2 month window in the summer? Like what will be the reaction? And I think there's going to be more problems when that happens, because I think people will be less reluctant to follow along with that.
Yeah, it's going to be kind of crazy, because like, you know, you're going to have your people that are like overreacting, and the minute someone starts sniffling, they're going to try to shut everything down. And then you're going to have the other people that are like, you know, look what it did to the economy and a bunch of other things. Like we can't shut down. And then it's going to be a big, big battle.
Yeah. And everyone out there has an opinion. You know, there's unfortunately a lot of people who are not elected officials or experts, you know, me being one of them, you being one of them, putting out opinions out there, you know, and it's like we just need some kind of like good leadership that's going to just spell it out black and white and make a good rational call that will help everybody, you know, some way.
Donnie Schenkel for president. Hey, listen, before we get off of this, because I know we've been going for a little bit, but before we got on and started recording, you showed me a stack of books from all different seminars, and you posted recently about a Donnie Schenkel seminar and stuff like that. So do you have anything else in there quote-wise or anything else that you'd want to share today before we jump off? Anything else that sticks out?
Oh, from the Donnie seminar?
For any of them, anything else that you were kind of that caught your eye while you were reading through those, because you had some pretty good stuff.
Well, I guess I can just quickly pull one up from the post that I put on Instagram, because there were three of them that I put up, and one of them, this is a great one. This is all from the Schenkel seminar, which that was such a great trip. That was Jamie Verner and Chuck from the Barbell Club.
Right.
We, you know, we were the only ones from Barbell Club to go down there to Warwick, Barbell Club, Warwick Weightlifting, Warwick Intrepid CrossFit.
Intrepid Strength
and Conditioning. There we go. Yes. There's the gym name. And there's been like so many so many barbell club names and other things, but we went down there for that and we almost hit a deer on the road, which that was kind of crazy. We stopped at one of those, you know, those rest stops on the highway and we were getting a Starbucks and things like that. And we got delayed there. Jamie forgot his wallet in the car. So we had to go all the way back out, get his wallet, come back in. And that delayed us. And then we got on the highway and not too long after that, a deer, 9 a.m., deer just rolls right out on the road and we could see it way out in front of us. And it was at a time difference where it's like, what would have happened if we got in the car 30 seconds earlier? Would we have hit that deer? You know, would we have lined up with it?
Yeah.
So it's kind of one. So we were all, you know, like thinking about that, like, oh man, we would have missed the Shankill seminar. Like we weren't really concerned with totaling my Jeep or dying. We were like, shit, we would have missed the Shankill seminar.
Well, that was the most important thing. I mean, you know, sacrifices have to be made. You got to.
Yeah, they do. I mean, and so we get there and no joke, everyone is in the entranceway of the gym huddled together. And Donnie is out in the open space at the gym by the whiteboard. Right. And he's wearing his puffer jacket and he's pacing back and forth like a caged lion, you know, and no one was going over to say hello to him. Everyone was terrified. I knew I wasn't going over there, at least not by myself. You know, so everyone's terrified to go over there. And finally it was time. Maybe it was like a 10 a.m. start time or whatever. And he goes, all right, let's begin. And everyone was like, oh, okay. All right. And everyone ran over there and took a seat. There were chairs and he went up by the board and gave, you know, some lectures on, you know, just lifting technique and training principles and some stories from California Strength and Muscle Driver and his career and what he's learned because he's traveled the world learning different things on weightlifting. And so that was just a great trip to be there and experience that with him. And just a couple other little highlights. I know he talked about getting deep in the squat. So he had everyone hold a bar up over their head and get as deep as they could in a squat. And I got ass to grass. Like my butt was like a half an inch off the floor, if not deeper. And he came over to me and he's like, that's very good. And he approved. And I was like, oh my God, all right, Donnie Shankill said I did good. And then we did a couple other things. You know, we did some snatches and Donnie gave me more compliments and I was all the way up front. And then he told us about being violent with the hips and really, you know, we were working at the hip position, the high hang, doing snatches. And he's like, you really got to drive hard with the hips and put it up there. And on one of his commands, he said, go. And I did it. The bar went overhead. I caught it fine. And then it rolled back behind me. And I had a decision. And it was, do I drop the barbell and make a huge loud noise and all this stuff as it rolls back behind me like a PVC pipe, or do I hang on to it? And I hung on to it. And luckily I had the flexibility not to tear my shoulders in half. And the bar just kind of rolls back. Scary. It's on my hips behind me. And I have to do this weird thing of like tilting to the side to put one end of it down and flip around and get it. And the whole time he's right in front of me and he looks me right in the eye, shakes his head, and he's like, and after I gave you all those compliments, and then he walked away, and I was like, oh man, you know, I know. I was like,
you should have did the George Costanza, take the first compliment and leave. I'm done. Thank you. I'm out of here. Have a good day.
They're like, where are you going? And I'm like, oh, that's it. I'm actually pretty good.
I can get ass to grass, and Donnie said so I'm out of here.
Yeah,
that's where it should have been. Your seminar should have been done at the squatting.
I know. I flew too close to the sun, and then I crashed and burned. But no, he was super cool. You know, I believe he clean and jerked like 82 or maybe even 85.
Right.
Like something that I'd never seen in person before, and I've never seen someone move that fast on a jerk since. His jerk technique and speed is incredible. Like when you watch the videos, you get a sense of it, but when you're like 8 feet from it, you're like, oh my gosh, like that is like that's what he means when he talks about speed. that like a video doesn't really show you speed. Like it's totally different right. when you see it in person.
Well, because you can like, almost feel it and you can hear it and you just see the whoosh and like how yeah. just how fast and you can feel the vibration of how hard he's just slapping under that bar. You can almost feel how hard he's locking out and just punching that elbows, those elbows. And you know, you can just, yeah, it's a different beast. Like, yeah, you know, when we were at the Arnold and watching Kane Wilkes do, what did he do, 2.25?
Yeah.
225 and just how easy he cleaned that and how fast he went under the bar. It was just unreal. So and I can and imagine. You see
that clean and jerk is impressive because of just the sheer weight of it.
Right.
But the shankle clean and jerk is something else. Like, it's like you said, you can just feel his power. And then when you're doing jerks, you're like, man, I feel so soft. I feel so weak. You know, trying it's to
supposed
do jerks.
It's supposed to motivate you. And sometimes it does the other. You're like, oh, yeah. I'm not Donnie.
What I do is not a jerk. That's a jerk. Like yeah. what I do is a split to overhead. That's all I yeah. do.
Split push press.
So to answer your question, from the notes that I took, one quote he mentioned here was, the only way to gain courage is through repetition. And I just thought that was a pretty cool quote. It's
exactly what we were talking about before, right? Like, exactly. You know, why? How do I get past these numbers, right? It's like
brings
gotta,
it back full
don't
circle.
Don't be afraid to fail. Don't be afraid to miss. It's gonna happen, but you gotta keep doing it. Be stubborn, and that's what it is. Be persistent, right?
Exactly.
So that's yeah.
Awesome. The next quote is: "Be aggressive and confident. Have an ego when you lift," and that's kind of like you know when. That maybe that's why I told the bar I'm bigger than you. You know, it's like
yeah.
normally when you know you're setting up, you know, you're by yourself, you're quiet, you're just like, all right, I'm gonna do this snatch. This day I was like, you know what, like this is my room, you know,
right?
I should be able to do this. This is not heavy. And it was also just like looking at the plates, you know, just a 45 pound bumper plate with like a little 10 on the side, a little metal 10, because I use the metals. It doesn't look like much.
Right.
Like, why can't I pick this little thing up? It's like,
yeah.
So it helps. So it's true. Have an ego.
That reminds me of something John North said to me at the Arnold too. Is it was after our session was done, we were all packing up and leaving and everything. And you know, he had a couple of his guys had a really good day and out-totaled me that day. And you know, he came up and he was like, hey, good job, whatever. You know, just congratulate me on how I did. And you know, you know, told him and his team and everything like that, you know, same thing, you know, cause they all did awesome. And, you know, he said something to me about, you know, oh, hey, you got to come to Vegas for the next meet because we got to do this all over again. You know, but then he made like, you know, he's just giving me kind of a hard time, just like kind of busting my chops a little bit. It was funny. And he was like, you know, but you're not going to beat Matt, you know, Matt, you can't beat my guy, Matt. And I was like, oh, I couldn't do it today. You know, and I kind of like took the high road on it. And I was like, you know, yeah no, he got me today. You know, I did my best and, you know, we took a jump and missed a lift and whatever. And he's like, and he just looked at me and he got serious. Like, but he was joking the whole time. He just looked me in the eye, got serious. He said, don't be so humble. That's what he said to me. And I don't think I'm ever going to forget that. He said, don't be so humble. And then you know, it probably goes back to him and Donnie, you know, training back in the day. It's one of the things. You got to have a little bit of an ego when you lift. So, you know, that's what he told
me.
Especially
when you're mixing it up with a bunch of guys that are of similar abilities and everyone's trying to win that right. gold medal, you know, and
I'm just trying to be a nice guy. I'm not out here to make enemies, you know. So I was just trying to be like, yeah, no, he got me, you know, whatever. And he just looked me in the face and don't be so humble. And I said, oh,
you need to do like I know John has told stories of where he would have people's names written on the mirror in lipstick. You gotta and then he would cross them off, you know, as they either dropped out of the sport or as he beat them. So like we gotta write, we gotta make a list, hang it up in the gym. You know, that's what Kim used to do. When we were training for Masters World Championships, we would look up to see who the reigning champ was and Kim would write their name in chalk on the floor and it would be behind the platform. So she would kind of have to walk over it, you know, and dominate it, you know, and hit lifts on top of it. And that was just one thing that Kim would do. Cause there's no other Masters lady in their late 50s or early 60s, you know, lifting in the gym. So she had to kind of do it vicariously through the universe. And we would hope that they would feel it wherever they were in the world when she would crush a lift.
So weightlifting voodoo, right?
Yeah. Weightlifting voodoo. well, here, one last quote from the, that Shankle seminar, which What a seminar. I said it in my post. Like,
I'm so jealous.
Yeah, that's one to be jealous about. Like, there's so many weightlifting seminars that I've taken where it's like, all right, that was cool. It's like, this was an experience. This was like, it was like authentic. It was like, you know, this is what they should all be like. And I think I took the USAW seminar maybe the following year or like in the spring, because this was in the fall.
Yeah.
That's a hard act to follow. You know, I was coming off the Shankle seminar going into the USAW one at the time. And it was like, all right, this is cute. This is cool. You know, I'm learning. I learned a lot. But it was like, it was missing the grittiness and the authenticness of like, okay, that was a real weightlifting seminar, that Shankle seminar.
Well, just that whole gym. I mean, Ryan had a great, I know he's moved since, but like, as far as like being a weightlifter, that felt like the dungeon down there. Cause I went down there with my second meet ever. That place was cool. I can only imagine lifting down there in the dark with Donnie and just being like, that had to be pretty sweet. So.
Yeah. And you know, one thing I will say too, when we were maxing out and we were lifting, I think he probably gave us like an assignment first. Mm-hmm. He's like, okay, you guys are going to lift up to 70% or something like that. He didn't walk around and coach too much. Instead, he sat at his desk. So he had a desk and a laptop, and you know, he's just, it's almost like you were a team out there lifting, and he was the coach out there just sitting back, and he would look up from his notes and observe people lifting but not say anything, you know. And I just thought that was really cool too. It's he hasn't taught you anything yet, and he also, we're not maxing out, he's just watching to see how you move. And it's like, I thought that was a very smart thing to do, versus like other coaches at other seminars, they're on you from the moment you pick up the bar.
Right.
And he was just very patient. He's, you know, they call him the lion killer. He's just like a lion, just watching all the gazelles go by, just being patient. All right. Just observing, seeing what's going on. And then later on, he'll come and get you.
Yeah, no, it's a smart technique to do that, because, you know, like, I used to be pretty into golf back in the day and play a lot of like golf on the side. And my job at the time used to get us in with some pro-ams. So we get to play with some tour pros. And I've noticed that a lot of them, especially their caddies, like, they won't give you tips. I've been invited to go to a range and stuff like that, but they won't. I had one of the pros try to actually physically change my swing on the course, and it was a miserable time. But some of the other ones, they were like, you know, maybe like move the ball up in your stance a little bit, whatever, but they were not changing your mechanics. And they're like, we don't want to, like, you do what you got to do. I want to see how you move, play, like changing and tweaking that stuff is for the range. So, you know, like it's kind of cool that he kind of let you do your thing, just kind of watched. And then we'll make some tweaks when it's time to do that, but I'm not going to grab you the minute you walk in and try and structure you into something else, because that's going to throw you off for the whole day. So that's pretty cool.
Well, another thing he talked about was just style. You know, he's probably watching everyone's style. And that was, he gave out these things that were must. Like, you, like, everyone must have a tight back. That was the golden rule.
Right.
And you must be able to get low. You know, like, so he had this list of must. But then he said, you know, style plus the must equals confidence.
Right.
And that's how you can... You know, that's how you can start to build yourself up as a good lifter.
Yeah, it's smart, because like, no, none of you guys were walking in there as never having snatched a barbell before. You know, like, everybody had been around and done some form of weightlifting, I'm assuming. So, you know, he's probably got a, you know, he can't break you down and build you up in one day from scratch. So
no,
yeah,
no. Well, last quote here. This one's I think my favorite. They're all so good. But he said, sit, utilize time to think on what you can do better. When you get up, it's time to react.
Right.
So it's like, you know, I think that's the hardest thing to do. It's to get people to kind of slow down, think about what you're doing, especially if you're training by yourself. But even if you're training in a group, you know, like, don't hit a lift and go have a conversation with five people.
Right.
You know, because now you're not reflecting on what you're supposed to be doing and maybe what you could have done better on the next lift or could do better on the next lift. And then when you get up from your resting bench or your chair, now it's time just to go and do it. Like, you thought about it, you visualized it. Now the thinking shouldn't be happening when you're on the bar. But okay, I got to keep my chest up. all right, I got to pull under harder on this one. That's what you should have been doing. That's the homework you should have been doing in between the lifts when you went to go sit down and rest.
Yeah, that's something that you always do with me is, like, you try to reel me in after every lift and, you know, sit me down and be like, okay, what did you feel, you know, miss or make? You know, it doesn't matter. What did it feel like, right?
Yeah.
So how did it feel? And sometimes, you know, I catch myself and I'll be like, I felt fine. And I'm like, that's not what he's looking for. Like, he wants to know, like, what I felt, right? So I'm trying to get better at coming up with, you know, paying more attention and, you know, being more aware of what I'm feeling during the lift so I can give you that information. So you can tell me, like, okay, well, then on the next one, you need to feel this. And then we can go out and react, right? So it's, you know, it's definitely really, really true. And it goes back to how we kind of kicked off the whole podcast with, you know, whether it's a, you know, this quote's not necessarily about a PR, but, you know, it's when you're time to go lift, you just got to react and just move, you know, and not think about the number that's on the barbell or anything like that. It's just,
yeah, like the archer shooting for a brass buckle and being divided by it and not being able to utilize their full skill. Well, the same thing could be also put, if we want to put another spin on it, being right on top of the bar and now trying to coach yourself on what you need to do better. And now you're thinking during the lift and thinking is slow. You know, you have to react, like Donnie says, and John would say that all the time as well, just reacting. And I know that's something that, you know, like you said, we've worked on so much where, you know, you'll do a lift and I'm like, I think you were thinking while you're doing that lift. It's
it's like obvious. Like you can see, you can tell, like, you know, you hesitated pulling under or you just, whatever it is, like the pull from the floor, the first pull was really slow because you were thinking about being in your heels or thinking about having a tight back or whatever it is. Like you got to just at that point, tight back, loose back, whatever it is, like that stuff's already got to be taken care of because once the bar breaks the floor, you just got to go.
Yeah. And I think that's where stuff like visualization comes into play where you're sitting down, you're kind of doing that blank stare at the bar, you know, you're not blinking, but you're like seeing yourself hitting the next lift. And that's something that I did a lot when I couldn't snatch was I would just think about, and I would watch videos too of myself snatching from before, but I would also just think about myself doing it over and over again. And then when I was able to get back on the bar and finally do a squat snatch, the first time I had done squat snatches in a while was I think your first meet.
Might have been. Yeah. Cause I remember there was a few meets where like I'd gone and you were messing around with some splits and some split snatches and things like that. So I'd seen you at a meet do some of those things. So
yeah, I did three in a row. I did,
but yeah, Camillus. I can't remember if at the first meet.
Yeah. I did Camillus. I did Elmira. And then I did the Mohawk. Yeah. And the Mohawk is when I brought back the squat.
Right. Yeah. I think you're right.
So it's like, I hadn't done it for a while. Like I'm sure the split helped a little bit, but a lot of visualizing what I needed to do and what it felt like, you know, just like driving, like if I'm driving to Binghamton, you're just kind of dazed out on 88, just staring at the road. And I'm just thinking about myself.
Yeah. Listening to all the pedals.
Like. Yeah. So it's, comes a long way just to kind of sit and think on what you need to do, think on how you can be better. And then when it's time, stand up and react.
Just go do it. Yep. Yeah. It's so true.
Awesome. Well, thanks for coming on today, Frank. It's a great show.
Yeah, it was fun. Good talk. Yeah. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it. Send us your lifts, people. We want to see them.
Yep. Slide into the DMs for the Barbell Strikes Back on Instagram. Frank, where can people find you?
On Instagram at Frank_Ford_.
Awesome. And don't forget to follow me as well, James A. McDermott, if you would like. Be sure to go on to Apple Podcast, leave a rating or a 5-star rating and a positive review for the show if you think you deserve it. And also click subscribe so you know when new shows are coming out. I have a show I'm going to do later on this week with a kettlebell world champion. So that will be pretty cool. Different perspective on training and also just, you know, just being a champion and things like that. So that'll be fun. I'm excited.
Sounds cool.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, everybody, for listening. Thank you, Frank, for coming on.
Thanks, James. Have a good one, guys.